And I look at digital wellness as just an umbrella term to really look at the intersection of technology and wellness broadly and think about how all of these different aspects fit together and, you know, how should we be thinking about technology very broadly across all of these channels and the relationship that we have with it and how it affects the way we live.
Hello and welcome to episode 102 of the Digital Mindfulness Podcast. I'm your host, Lawrence Ampofo. Joining me in the show today is Jeremy McCarthy, who's Group Director of SPA at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel Group. In this episode, Jeremy talks to us about the growing area of digital wellness, and in particular, how the future looks especially bright for those people who live and work in digitized environments, both now and in the future. But before we begin this fascinating interview, welcome to the Digital Mindfulness Show, where we bring you the best teachers and thought leaders from around the world to discuss how time well spent digitized experiences can help improve human society and the world more generally. If you're new to our show, then the best place to find out much more about what we're doing is to visit digitalmindfulness.net/start, where you'll find a collection of some required listening shows where we discuss everything from, as we're going to talk about now, digital wellness, through persuasive technologies, behavior design, and much, much more. So now enjoy this show with Jeremy McCarthy. Jeremy, thanks so much for being on Digital Mindfulness today. I'm really excited to talk to you more about your work in digital wellness, how you got here, and also this incredible white paper that you've just drafted with your team of people. So welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm a regular listener, so I'm happy to be here with you.
Oh, thank you. So Jeremy, I of course know this personally, but I wonder if you can share with the audience a little bit about yourself and particularly your really interesting story of how you came to be in the wellness industry and also how you've almost evolved your focus now to really center in on digital wellness.
Sure. So, I mean, I'm the group director of spa and wellness for Mandarin Oriental Hotel Group. So I oversee our spas and wellness programming across all of our hotels worldwide. And I kind of grew up in the hotel industry. I mean, my first hotel job was when I was studying psychology in college, and I was a lifeguard at the swimming pool as a part-time job. But I was really interested in fitness and wellness, and you know, we decided to put a spa into that first hotel that I was working at, and that turned into a lifelong career of opening and operating spas. But I had this academic background in psychology, and eventually in 2008, I went back to school to the University of Pennsylvania and got my Master of Applied Positive Psychology, and I did my thesis on the psychology of spas and well-being. And one of the central things that I found in that thesis was that, you know, maybe one of the big benefits of a spa, or maybe one of the reasons why people go to spas and get so much enjoyment and satisfaction out of visiting a spa, is not so much for the reasons that we tend to promote in our industry, which are, you know, the wonderful treatments and products and facilities and all those kinds of obvious things, but actually, maybe a lot of the benefit just comes from having a place to go where you put your technology away and you spend some time alone in a quiet space with your thoughts and being touched by a nurturing healer. And so, you know, thinking about these psychological aspects of my business in the spa world really got me thinking about the role of technology and how it intersects with well-being and what can we do in our spas to help people balance that and find a place to, you know, just kind of take a break or spend some time in silence or quiet reflection.
That's great. I know that in the digital wellness industry, we're constantly thinking to ourselves, you know, that the lexicon and the way that we define everything is constantly changing. So I guess from your perspective, being in the industry, what would you say digital wellness is exactly, and why is it so important?
Yeah, I agree. The lexicon is changing quite a bit, and I don't necessarily know that digital wellness is exactly the right term or that a perfect definition has been settled on. Mm. What I see is that there are a lot of people that are talking in this space. So you have people talking about digital ethics and really questioning what should we be doing with technology and what is the right moral approach to the way that we develop our technology. And Tristan Harris of Time Well Spent, you know, would be an example of a voice in that area. And then you have digital citizenship, people talking about how do we relate to each other online, and how does technology impact our relationships. And so an example of a voice in that area would be Sherry Turkle, who has a very popular TED Talk and a series of books about, you know, just how technology is impacting the social dynamic. Then there's digital mindfulness, of course, and you know, you're an example of somebody who's really bringing that conversation to the forefront, and just thinking about what is our awareness and intentionality behind the way that we use technology, and, you know, are we using technology in a way that serves us, or are we, you know, kind of becoming manipulated by our technology? Mm. And then digital nutrition, which is kind of looking at technology use the way that we look at food consumption, which is to say that technology is not necessarily good or bad, but we should have better guidelines to understand what is the right quantity and quality of the content that we're consuming. And I don't know if you've ever had Jocelyn Brewer on your show, but she's a psychologist who speaks and writes a lot about digital nutrition. And then the last one is digital education, and really thinking about how do we raise our children now in this hyper-connected age, and how do we teach ourselves and our children how to use technology in a way that supports human well-being and in a way that helps us live better lives and doesn't interfere with that. And Jean Twenge is a researcher who's done a lot of writing and speaking about that. So you have all these kind of sub-disciplines and experts that are digging into different aspects of this. And I think it's a conversation that continues to grow and expand. Mm. And I look at digital wellness as just an umbrella term to really look at the intersection of technology and wellness broadly and think about how all of these different aspects fit together, and you know, how should we be thinking about technology very broadly across all of these channels and the relationship that we have with it and how it affects the way we live.
We were talking in the pre-interview just about digital wellness more generally, and it is interesting now, wouldn't you say, that the topic in each one of these disciplines is now mainstream, and that even the biggest technology companies are seriously thinking about this and how to maybe integrate some of this thinking into their products.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you have a very good example with the recent controversy around Facebook and the way the data has been used from Facebook users. And I think a lot of people are questioning their relationship with Facebook now. And I think Facebook is aware that a lot of their users are questioning their relationship with Facebook. And so you hear, Mark Zuckerberg, even before this all happened, actually Mark Zuckerberg had come out and said that, they had announced a new mission statement, really putting their user well-being at the top of the list in terms of what they were focused on. And I think they have to do that because they realize that if consumers start generating a greater awareness that maybe using some of these tools or some of these technologies is actually working against us or is interfering with our well-being rather than enhancing it, that, you know, you will see people start to move off some of these platforms or look for better alternatives.
That's a really good point, Jeremy. And I think for my part, I was listening very recently to all of the Q1 earnings from the biggest technology companies and social media companies, and in particular, the one from Snap Inc. It was fascinating listening to the CEO, how he was really at pains to make the distinction between the differences and experiences that people have when they're connecting with friends, and then also when they're being advertised to. So I think what that really brought home to me was that at the very highest levels in Silicon Valley, people were really conscious that this isn't just a nice to have anymore. This whole idea of digital wellness and being aware of our digitized experiences, but now this is very much an economic imperative.
Yeah, well, and there's a natural conflict that is being highlighted here, because you know, one of the things, and I know we'll get into our white paper a little bit, but one of the things that we mentioned in our white paper is the CEO of Netflix saying that actually our biggest competitor is sleep.
Yeah.
Because if Netflix needs to drive engagement, and you know, a lot of these technology platforms, they need, because they work with advertisers and because they're funded by advertising, they're going to make more money the more they can keep you online. And so, you know, when you think about Netflix saying that their biggest competitor is sleep, then you can see how, you know, you have a technology company that is literally trying to figure out how they can keep you from sleeping, because that's the way that you're going to have your eyeballs on their platform longer. And so it creates this tension where, and you know, there's a lot of great things that technology brings too, so I don't want to sound like it's only negative, but I think we need to be aware of this contradiction where almost by nature it has to interfere with human well-being for these companies to be successful.
So, Jeremy, let's talk about this this white paper that you've just co-authored, which is called Wellness in the Age of the Smartphone. And I wonder if you can tell us, of course, a little bit about the white paper, but also what the drive was to create, why you thought, for example, a white paper over something like, say, a video, which has more engagement, well, you know, which generally tend to get more engagement, why you thought this was the right vehicle to really have a look at the entire digital wellness ecosystem.
Yeah, well, the way that it emerged was out of conversations at the Global Wellness Summit, which is an event of you know, leaders in the wellness industry. And there's a lot of high-level discussions about health and wellness, and people from different segments of the industry talking about things that are going on in health and well-being. And a couple of years ago, when I was at one of the summits, what I noticed is there was so much technological optimism. I mean, there was a lot of excitement about, and rightly so. I mean, there's a lot of really exciting things happening with technology. So you have, you know, these amazing apps that are available now, and there's nanotechnology and artificial intelligence and robotics and stem cell therapies and DNA analysis. And there's all these amazing things that have the potential to have a massive positive impact on human wellness. But I was a bit surprised that nobody was really talking about the potential risks or downsides, or how technology maybe could go wrong, or where it could steer us in the wrong direction. And there was only really one other speaker there that was talking about that, and that was Thierry Malleret, who's an economist. And he's kind of a trend forecaster, and he puts out a trend report called the Monthly Barometer. And he gave a presentation where he was talking about the rise of anxiety, depression, and suicide, especially in teenage girls. And he was kind of saying nobody really knows exactly why, but a likely culprit is social media and the rise of technology in that demographic. And so I went up to him after and I said, you know, everybody here is so excited about technology. You're the only person who really put up a red flag and said there are things here that we need to watch out for. So we started talking, and then some of the attendees were physicians from the Mayo Clinic, Paul Lindbergh, who heads up their health and wellness department, and Dr. Brent Bauer, who oversees integrative medicine for Mayo Clinic. So we started collaborating on this and just thinking, well, let's just try to get some of this information together to see what's there. And we just started looking at studies that have been done and research that's out there, and just trying to get a snapshot of what might be some of the risks or what might be some of the areas that we should watch out for.
What would you say then, Jeremy, are some of the main challenges that you identified in terms of the way that technology is used today?
Yeah, so we found six main areas where there's, I guess I would say, a cause for concern. Mm. So the first one is probably the one that most people are aware of, which is sleep. So I think you hear a lot of, I think a lot of people are talking about how technology may be interfering with sleep, either personally or because they've read about it in the media, and we've seen a lot of stories about that. But certainly there's a lot of research that shows that, you know, extended screen time is correlated with reduced amount of time sleeping. And like I said, you have Netflix competing with sleep, and most of us can relate to that because we've had those battles where we're trying to use our willpower to shut Netflix off and go to sleep when we know we should be. So sleep is a big area. A second one is around inactivity, and, you know, just the relationship between technology and living a more sedentary lifestyle. So, we see obesity continue to rise in developed nations around the world, and rising levels of heart disease and, diseases of inactivity, basically, that are all in some way linked to our lifestyle, which revolves around, you know, being attached to a device or a screen or sitting at a desk for many hours of the day. So that's a problem area. And then it starts to get more interesting. So, you know, mental wellness is, I think, an area that maybe not everybody has thought about. And, you know, that's like the example that Thierry Malory raised of anxiety levels rising, depression levels rising, thoughts of suicide rising, and the risk factors for suicide go up with, you know, again, it's correlated with the amount of screen time that people use. And so Jean Twenge, I think, is one of the researchers who has talked a lot about this. So you see this link between mental health and technology use. And it's a little bit ironic because you think that we're connecting with other people using technology, we're being entertained by technology. It seems like it should be a positive relationship, but actually it seems to drive a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress. And then tied to that is social relationships and loneliness. So I think a lot of countries are reporting now an epidemic of loneliness where, there's just a lot more people that spend more time, you know, in their home, not connecting to other people in the real world, not having good relationships with other people. And loneliness is actually has just as high a risk of mortality as things like smoking and obesity. So you don't often think of loneliness as a health epidemic, but actually it can be. And I think the technology platforms are just changing so fast from one generation to the next. So you have, in some cases, you have grandparents that just feel completely cut off from their children or their grandchildren because the way we communicate has moved on. And if they're not kind of caught up with that, they feel cut out and left out. And so we see that rising around the world. And then the fifth area is around distraction and safety. And, it's interesting because I grew up in a world where if there was a car accident or a plane crash or a bus crash or a train accident, you know, the first question would always be, was the driver intoxicated? Mm-hmm. And nowadays that question has changed to, was the driver distracted? Mm-hmm. And we just see, you know, rising number of accidents. Texting and driving is a huge thing, especially for teenage drivers. And so, you know, all these things that I remember growing up and worrying about drinking and driving and hearing about that as being the most dangerous thing on the road, you know, now seems to be replaced by texting and driving. And not just driving on the road, but when there's a car, when there's a plane crash or a train accident, or a bus accident or things like that, often technology seems to be involved in some way. And then the last one is in some ways the most interesting because it's the last area is around productivity. And I think you would think that maybe we would be making all of these sacrifices in wellness because of the amazing productivity that we get out of having all of this technology and all of this powerful tools at our disposal. But actually, you know, there's something that experts call the productivity paradox, which is that, you know, somehow in spite of all these new advances and all the new technology that we have, the more developed nations are actually slowing down in terms of productivity and not speeding up. And I think, you know, people can generally relate to this on an individual level because we have all these amazing tools that are intended to help us get things done, but somehow we feel busier and more stressed out and less able to get things done than ever. And, you know, there's all kinds of research about how, you know, just having a phone near you kind of creates a mental drain on whatever you're doing and distracts you from whatever you might be intending to focus on. So even productivity, which you would think would be a benefit of technology, actually seems in some ways to suffer. And so, you know, this is not, I don't want, because, you know, that's a lot of doom and gloom when I talk about all these problem areas. But the idea is not to discount the fact that technology is amazing. In fact, I always say the problem with technology is not that it's bad, it's that it's too good. Yeah. And so we get all of these great benefits from technology, but it's just maybe these are areas that we should consider and think about. And are there ways that we can mitigate some of the potential risks in these areas while extracting the great benefit that we want to get out of our devices?
But I'm wondering, Jeremy, again, with all of the challenges that the paper has outlined, whether, I mean, and this is one thing you didn't really touch on in the paper, but what impact do you think then that this has on the multi-trillion dollar wellness industry as an industry? Because we've spoken, I guess, at the human level on how this would affect people individually. But in terms of people really thinking about their wellness and then companies serving that need, what impact then do these technology challenges have on that?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the wellness industry is really, like every other industry, is going through a massive impact that's being driven by technology. So it, you know, it touches all sectors and nobody escapes from it. I think for the wellness industry in particular, you know, there's kind of two sides to the coin, because there are the amazing things that are happening through technology that are boosting human wellness. I mean, advances in modern medicine, new technologies in healthcare, new ways to deliver treatments to people. Even the whole idea of, you know, wearable devices and app technology that drives behavior change. And I think about these positive aspects a lot, because in my own personal life, a lot of my wellness practices are things that I have either learned or been inspired by or am motivated by things that I see online. So you can't discount any of that. There's a huge positive force coming from technology that affects human wellness. But then there's all of this other side and all of these risks and potential challenges that come with it. So I think for the wellness industry, it's kind of, you know, there's going to be one foot in both camps. There are going to be those that are out there on the cutting edge, bringing in new technologies and trying to improve human wellness. And there are going to be other people coming up, and this is maybe where we fit in with our spas, is trying to think about ways that we can help people offset the stresses that technology brings and the anxiety that technology brings and the impact on sleep and our physiology and our neurology and our emotional health and all of those things, and thinking about how we offset that and occasionally disconnect from that and give ourselves a chance to recover. So I think you'll see both sides of that coin continuing to grow.
Because it's really interesting that this would have been very much with yourself driving this, but the Mandarin Oriental Group had one of the very first digital wellness products to help offset some of these, maybe some of the more negative impacts, or helping people that are facing challenges from the overuse of technologies. But again, for people that might not know very much about that, what services do you have and what products do you have? And I guess since they were launched last year, what's the feedback that you've had from people that have experienced this?
But yeah, thank you. So we started actually almost 2 years ago now, we first started this, and it started kind of as a marketing promotion. I mean, you know, again, I was thinking about the impact of spas on psychology and the need to separate from technology. And so we did a promotion where we created a treatment that was for people to come into the spa and just take some time, disconnect from technology. We would give a treatment that would focus on the areas where we tend to carry stress with technology. So, you know, kind of around the eyes, the neck, the shoulders, the hands, the forearms, the postural issues that come from staring down at screens for too many hours during the day. And we developed some tips, some digital wellness tips for people to take home with them, to change the way they think about their relationship with technology. And we started putting, you know, different products around mindfulness, you know, really, really anything that people could take home and do a non-digital mindfulness ritual. Cool. That they could bring home and practice, whether that was coloring or tea or a bath ritual or meditation, but encouraging people to put their phone down and have a practice where they just were alone with their thoughts. And for that first year when we launched this promotion, I was traveling around the world and talking to our spas and talking to journalists and talking to our guests. And what I found was that everywhere I went, in any country in the world, and anybody that I talked to, and everybody had a personal story that they would share about their own struggle with managing their well-being in the age of technology. And, you know, maybe it was, yeah, the impact on sleep or the stress of being connected all the time, or maybe it was the relationship they have with their spouse or the relationship they have with their kids and how technology was interfering in some way with that. But it was everybody that I talk to nowadays has a story to share about the way technology is having this impact. So I came back from that trip and basically said to our spas that this can't just be a one-year promotion that we do and then move on to something else, that this should actually be a core part of our strategy going forward, and that we need to, that this is going to be the biggest impact on human wellness that we have seen in our lifetime. Cool. And we need to learn in our spas, how can we help people to deal with that? And so we've been trying to build on the program and expand on it. We've been doing some digital wellness retreats in certain locations where anywhere from half day to 2 days, we'll have people come into our spas and, you know, put their phones away and, you know, do yoga or learn meditation or just socialize with one another. And the impact of those things, and you know, when we first started, I actually thought, you know, asking someone to put their phone away for half a day, like that's not that big of a deal, we're not really going to make that big of an impact by doing that. Well, actually I was wrong. You know, people come, and just a half a day of putting your phone away and focusing on your own personal well-being. And what we find over and over again is that people come out of the experience saying, first of all, that they didn't realize, until they take that time away from technology, they didn't realize the impact that technology was having on them. Wow. But you know, spending time away would kind of lift the fog and make them more aware of their relationship. The other thing that people invariably find is that actually, when they spend some time away from technology, they usually realize that they actually haven't missed out on very much. You know, because we tend to think that we need to always be connected or always be online. But actually, you can get away for a half a day and you come back and you haven't really missed out on very much. You're perfectly okay to miss a few hours of texts and social media and emails and whatever. And then the third thing that we saw is that, and this was something that we didn't really think about or expect when we started doing this, is the way that people connect with one another is so different. And, you know, even the very first digital wellness retreat that we did, which was in Las Vegas, and I was attending, and we did a yoga class in the morning. And after the class, there was a group of us that kind of gathered in the middle of the room and started chatting to one another. And one of the women came over and she said, "Well, I can't look at my phone, so I guess I'll come over and talk to you." And we all realized that the only reason any of us were talking to each other was because we didn't have our phones. If we had had our phones, we would have finished the yoga class, immediately gone and picked up your phone and checked your messages and gone back into that world, and you would not connect with the other people there. And so the bond and the cohesiveness and the relationships that get formed just from, you know, spending a few hours in this disconnected space is great to watch.
But one thing you did mention actually a little while ago, and we just kind of very briefly talked about it, were the proliferation of the different apps, tools in the digital wellness space. And of course, there are lots of yoga apps. There are lots of apps that help with mental well-being, psychological well-being. And I'm wondering, Jeremy, what you think of the potential for these apps to really help people with their wellness, or indeed what the future is, as you see it, for digital wellness?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I probably sound like I've been really hard on technology in this interview. But I should be clear. I'm a big fan of technology. I use social media. I use lots of apps on my own device. So I think there's a lot of potential, and you know, the way that I think about it, I mentioned earlier, technology has the potential to have the biggest negative impact on human wellness for the foreseeable future, but it also might be our only hope to find a solution. You know, I think if your strategy for kind of maintaining your wellness in the face of technology is to rely on your own human willpower, you're severely outgunned by the technology companies, because they're watching every move that we make. They're gathering so much data. And so it's very easy for them to figure out the glitches in our system that can be overcome. And so really what you need is good technology that can help us to manage these problems and to provide better solutions and to not interfere with human well-being, but to enhance it. And so I, you know, as much as I am very cautious and skeptical and, you know, warn people about the risks and dangers of technology, and I worry about it as a parent for my own kids, I also think we need technology to help us come up with the solutions, and we need those great apps that help us develop good lifestyle practices and teach us how to meditate and inspire us to get out and do exercise and do the things that we want to do. So I think those things are important too.
Do you personally have any favorite wellness apps that you use regularly?
Well, we just partnered in Mandarin Oriental. We just partnered with an app called Grokker. They're a website actually that offers wellness videos across a variety of different categories. And so we've just partnered with them to deliver yoga, meditation, Pilates, and fitness videos to our guests in the hotel room. And for me, this is a perfect example of a great use of technology because I travel all the time for work. And now wherever I am on the road in any hotel room, I can pull out my iPad and I can pull up a Grokker video and I can be doing, you know, yoga, or I can do a meditation, or I can do a fitness video anywhere that I am. And it's almost like, you know, having my gym with me wherever I go. So that's a great, that's an app that I use regularly.
That's great. That's great. And I think kind of going on from that, you know, for someone, you know, you're a parent, you're a busy professional, how, in addition to using the app, how do you practice digital wellness? Like, how do you, for example, integrate the digital nutrition, the digital citizenship into your everyday?
Yeah, well, I definitely don't have it all figured out. So I'm like everybody else. I'm trying to find my own boundaries. And I think that's an important point to note, because I think nobody is an expert in this right now, because the world is changing so fast and technology is changing so fast that nobody has exactly the right solution yet. But as a parent, this is something I'm thinking a lot about. How do I raise my kids, and how do I want to be a role model for my kids in the way that I engage with technology? So my wife and I have just recently started a new rule in our house that we do not look at phones in the house in front of our kids. We won't look at an iPad or a phone if the kids are around. And so that it doesn't mean that we don't use technology, but if I need to send a message or I want to look something up, I need to slip into another room and, you know, step out of the way and not be present. You know, if I'm there with my kids, I need to be present. And if I need to do something on technology, then I need to, you know, move into another area of the house and I'll almost hide from the kids so that they don't see, you know, because I don't want them to grow up just seeing their parents always looking at screens.
That's it. And so basically then one of the things that you are doing is being just more intentional with the way that you use the technology. Like you said, if you've got to, you wouldn't just be absentmindedly scrolling through videos and hoping for something to engage you. It's that if you actually do want to send a message or do something specific, then you'll go somewhere else and be intentional.
Definitely. And this is, you know, this is relatively recent. So for a lot of my kids' childhood, I was, you know, plopped down on the couch while they were playing and I might just be scrolling aimlessly on a device. And, you know, only recently as my kids are starting to get a little older and they're more aware and, you know, they're more, enticed by technology when they do see it and they want to be on it, that I felt like we needed to make a change in our household. But it has actually had very positive side effects for us in the sense that it does force me now to be more intentional about the way that I use technology. And I actually feel more productive because I'm using technology less, but in a more focused way to get done the things that I need to get done instead of going down that rabbit hole of just, you know, getting distracted by whatever might be on the device. I have to kind of do what I need to do quickly and then move back into my real life.
It's interesting you say this, Jeremy, because again, listening to the Facebook earnings call recently as well, and listening to previous ones, Mark Zuckerberg has spoken a lot about the wellness research that Facebook has conducted. Perhaps this research is being conducted in response to all of the different depositions and the different accusations that of the impact that Facebook has on wellness. But one of the things that he keeps mentioning is that shallow engagement with Facebook leads to more negative, more of these negative psychological impacts we were speaking about. So by just mindlessly scrolling through content on a shallow level, that doesn't relate to greater wellness, but rather when we are, as he says, connecting with friends and family and the engagement is much more deliberate and more meaningful, then the time spent on Facebook is well spent. And so All of that aside, I think it's really interesting how one of the benefits that you're talking about that you're getting through this practice, because a lot of people might well say, oh God, you know, like I could never do that. I've got children and they want my attention and I need to work. I need to do all of these things. Is that the time you're spending on these messages is greater because you can give greater attention to it. And then you give your kids greater attention as well. Like there's a greater level of quality in the attention that you're giving to those parts of your life.
Yeah, well, and I think another aspect of this is that technology, one of the things that technology does is sometimes it makes us feel productive without necessarily actually being productive. And so what I found for me personally is that a lot of times if I'm very busy and very stressed and I have a lot going on, then I'm always turning to technology and, you know, looking at my device more often because I want to feel like I can get something done, or I want to feel like I can, you know, maybe I can get through a few emails or respond to somebody or look something up that I need to do. And what I realized by doing that less and forcing myself, just by the nature of what we're trying to do in our household, by doing that less, is that you end up being more productive when you don't do that. Because now, for example, if I need to send an email, I'll sit down at my computer, not, you know, instead of pulling out my phone, I'll sit down at a computer, I'll send the emails that I need to send, and then I'll come back and be more present with my family instead of kind of half keeping an eye on your email, you know, throughout the day, but you're not really in a good space to actually get anything meaningful done. And so you feel like you're being productive, but really you're not getting much done.
So Jeremy, penultimate question, but, and I always ask this of all my guests, but when in this age where we are hyperconnected, what would you say then are the most important human qualities and how do we cultivate those?
Yeah, so I think about this a lot with my kids of, you know, what are the qualities that I want them to develop? And, you know, I think I want my kids to really be able to connect with other people. So I want them to be able to listen. I want them to be able to give their attention to somebody fully. I want them to be able to have empathy. And I think what will increasingly be a challenge as technology gets better and better, because like I say, the problem with technology is not that it's bad, it's that it's too good and it's going to get better. I think there's something about really connecting to what does it mean to be a non-digital human? You know, what does it mean to not use technology to fill a void in your day or to comfort yourself when you're lonely or stressed or feeling busy or overwhelmed. So just being able to be alone with uncomfortable thoughts, being more mindful, being able to use your body and really expand on the capacity of what you can do with your body and be in your body and be in your mind and, you know, connect to those things without the use of a device. I think that's important.
Jeremy, thanks so much for that. Unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show. But before you do go, where can people find out more about the work you're doing with the Mandarin Oriental Group and also with the Digital Wellness Initiative?
Sure. The Digital Wellness Initiative is a part of the Global Wellness Institute. So that's at globalwellnessinstitute.org. MandarinOrientalHotels.com. You can find out more about what we're doing in our spas there. And you can also connect via my blog, which is thepsychologyofwellbeing.com.
Just before we do go, I'm really interested in this. If you could just summarize this, like the psychology of wellness. Now, what is that? What is that actually about? If you could just summarize that for us, because I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, the blog launched out of my studies in positive psychology, and you know, if you think of the history of psychology, and a lot of modern psychology was based on Freudian psychology, where it's really figuring out what goes wrong with people, you know, what causes depression and anxiety and mental illness and those kinds of things. And in the last decade or so, there's been this new field that has really emerged of positive psychology, of looking at what are the things that make help us to flourish and thrive, and character strengths and positive relationships and positive emotions. And so the blog kind of touches on those aspects of well-being, that, you know, what are the psychological aspects of living a good life, and increasingly technology seems to play a role in some of those discussions. So all the dots are connected.
Absolutely. Well, Jeremy, thanks so much for spending time with us today and telling us much more about this fascinating area of digital wellness. It's been a real pleasure having you on the show, and thank you again for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me, and thank you for what you're doing with this show and creating a space for people to have these kinds of conversations. I think it's so important.